This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong. As interstate borders are reopening and local tourism is bouncing back, we also have to think about the future of what we want tourism to look like. How do we balance making tourism profitable, but also ensuring the protection and preservation of those spaces for sustainability purposes? I have Reza Cockrell, founder of the Habitat Penang Hill and managing director of Pacific Tiger Group, on the line to discuss that and more.
Thanks, Christine. Thank you very much for having me on BFM. I sit here in Hong Kong as the managing director of Pacific Tiger Group. We are an impact-aligned purpose business family office. Our main interests are in property development, in food production, and in hospitality. But my connection to Malaysia runs very deep. My mother is Malaysian. My father is half Chinese, half American. And we always used to go back to Malaysia for Chinese New Year, for Raya. So we have a deep connection to Malaysia, and in particular in Penang. And that's what kind of led us to conceiving and conceptualizing and eventually opening the Habitat Penang Hill.
Fantastic. So can you tell us a little bit about the Habitat Penang Hill and how it came to be?
The Habitat Penang Hill has been a passion project for what's going on probably about 6 or 7 years now. The whole story started with actually my father and a good friend of his and an accomplished landscape architect by the name of Frederick Walker, who lives in Penang. When they were walking around Penang Hill, and they were talking very much about how Penang Hill lends itself so much to tourism, but the infrastructure just wasn't there. And on one of their sort of rambling hikes around the hill, they found an old rainwater catchment that the British built in the late 1800s that diverts water from the top of Penang Hill into the Airitam Dam. It's there that they kind of came up with the idea of converting that water catchment into an accessible pathway to bring guests who come up on Penang Hill Tram or come up the Jeep track to give them better access into the rainforest. They then pitched the idea to the state government. And after a few iterations of public requests for proposals, we were awarded the contract to build the Habitat Penang Hill in about 2012. It took about 4 years to build it. In that process, I have to admit, the park grew in size and in importance to us. Every time I would visit Penang from Hong Kong, we'd have bigger ideas about what we wanted to build, what we wanted the park to stand for. Initially, the park was a for-profit park. Right? We saw this as actually a business opportunity. On a busy weekend, and of course this is pre-COVID, Penang Hill would play host to up to 13,000 tourists who would visit the top of the hill. But as I said before, there was not a lot for them to do. There's the Astaka with the food court up there. There's a few very sort of touristy but geographically irrelevant attractions up there. But apart from that, they'd come up, they look at the view, and they go back down again. And they kind of miss the point of what Penang Hill really stands for. So the Habitat is it's a 1.5-kilometer long nature trail. We have information boards on flora, fauna, interesting historical perspectives of the hill, things like that. We employ a team of very accomplished and very well-trained naturalists. We provide guided tours to the public. Right? We point out interesting flora, interesting fauna, but we really tell the story of why biodiversity is so important and why habitat preservation is so important. And we have different tools to do that. The naturalists do it by word, but we also have different experiences for guests, things like an aerial trail, a series of zip lines that give guests the experience of being up in the treetops and seeing the rainforest from a different perspective. It's something we don't think about, but you really see the rainforest from the ground looking up, right? And you think of the rainforest as the rainforest floor. But so many of the species in the rainforest, in fact, a vast majority of them actually live in the canopies. Right, from mammals to insects to different orchid species, a lot of that actually exists up in the treetops. So our aerial trail gives guests the opportunity to get up there and actually see that for themselves and see it up close, while still having, of course, a fun time. We have our Curtis Crest treetop walk, and that treetop walk, this is on the top of Flagstaff Hill, which is where our company takes the name from, Flagstaff Holdings. And the reason why we built this, so it's a ring canopy that hangs over the crown of the hill. And we built this because we wanted to show people how close Penang the city was to how close Penang the rainforest was, and how Penang Hill really is this sort of definitive, delicate balance between those two things that's exist for a couple hundred years already, right? The rainforest has been there for hundreds of millions of years. Penang as a city has been there since the late 1700s. And this balance of ecosystem and human habitat has been there. And we wanted to give people a perspective of how that works and what that looks like. But to show that how delicate it is and the responsibility that we have as stewards of both our development and of the environment itself in maintaining that balance. So through all these tools that we built, as I mentioned before, you know, it was a for-profit park. So we charge tickets at the entrance. We have a cafe on site. We have a gift store on site. The typical things that you'd find in a museum or a zoo or any kind of safari experience. But then the experience for us as a company and as a family of being responsible for this park really forced us to think about the role that we have ourselves, right? Here we are as sort of self-professed stewards of this rainforest. But we're also stewards of our businesses too, right? And our businesses all have impact, whether it's the communities in which we operate in, the communities that we sell to, the communities that we hire, right, that work for us. And it really made us think about what our role is, right? And what it really means to be stewards of enterprises like this. And that kind of forced us to think a lot more long-term and think about a lot more about the impact that we have in Penang. So we went back and really started to think about the habitat and realized that, you know, the benefactors of the habitat were really the school kids that came through. You know, we provided a lot of funding for public schools to come through, for local schools to come through. We provided a lot of funding for people with disabilities and different rest homes, therapy homes, and things like that to bring their guests. And you could see how people were just elated to be reconnected with the environment, right? Being out in nature and experiencing that for themselves. Then we kind of realized that, not to sound too sort of self-fulfilling and self-serving, but we kind of realized that the habitat was a lot better than that, right? We were doing a lot more good than just calling ourselves a for-profit park. So that's where we started to rethink about the position the habitat has. And that's where we founded the sister organization, the Habitat Foundation. And we've built in this sort of circular relationship between the two. Revenue from the park and the infrastructure that supports the park drives what we can do in the foundation and provides the infrastructure and a platform for the foundation to stand on. And that foundation is called the Habitat Foundation. And we've been in operation since 2017. And through it, we fund all kinds of work in the region, not just Malaysia, but throughout the region, as it relates to conservation. Directly, we do a lot of work with universities, Malaysian universities, foreign universities. We work with a lot of NGOs, right? Again, in Malaysia or in the region. But increasingly of importance to us is we work with a lot of in the education space, because we've come to the realization that all of this environmental conservation, environmental support that we're doing only really works if young people, all people, but particularly young people, are engaged, passionate, and can speak to this subject with a degree of knowledge. Mm. So education has become a fundamental pillar of what we do.
Fantastic. I mean, you hit on quite a number of points in that description of what the Habitat and the Habitat Foundation are all about, right? I think in the past, tourism used to be looked at as something that was reserved in sort of two categories. It was either extremely urban, so like city centers and stuff like that, or it was completely like nature. So you go to the beach or you go to like deep in the jungle and you camp there. Stuff, not necessarily something that marries the two, which I think is what the Habitat is so passionate about. And sort of becoming a bridge, not just for people to experience what the rainforest is like, but also to educate them about their responsibilities in preserving that environment. Would you say that's about right?
Absolutely. So I think one of the benefits that we had being in Penang, so I think that was the first sort of element that we identified, right? We needed to provide access to a rainforest where people could come easily, right? Mm. Malaysia has tremendous, some of the most beautiful rainforests on the planet, but a lot of them it's quite difficult to access,
yeah.
Right? You have something like Danam Valley. Danam Valley is so critical and so important to science. It's so important to our heritage as human beings, our planet's heritage. But it's quite hard to get to, right? You're talking about a 4 or 5 hour drive out of KK. The net that Danam can cast, especially when it comes to mass tourism, is quite weak, right? Penang Hill, on the other hand, we're accessible by a 5-minute tram ride from Airitam. We can host 13,000 people on a weekend, right? So providing that ease of access, I think, was one of the first major hurdles that we were able to overcome, right? That other places of natural interest might find a lot more difficult.
Mm.
Then moving along from that, there's definitely been a change in the way people think about or what they seek out of their holiday experiences, right?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to travel to Hong Kong or Singapore or Penang or KL. Urban experiences are always going to be important. But increasingly, I think people want to reconnect with nature, right? Mm. And we can't have this conversation without sort of addressing the elephant in the room. And in this case, it's COVID, right?
Right.
COVID and the lockdown of COVID really forced people to seek outdoor experiences and the drive to be healthy and more reconnected. And I think that's the main trend that maybe sort of prior to COVID, we had already identified a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the momentum building, but COVID has really pushed it over that tipping point.
And absolutely, I totally agree. What we'll be doing is we'll be taking a short break right now. And then after that, we will continue speaking about the effect of the pandemic and what that was like for the Habitat as well. So you are listening to Open for Business with Reza Cockrell, founder of the Habitat Penang Hill. I'm Christine Wong. This is BFM 89.9.
Begin Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong, and I have Reza Cockrell, founder of the Habitat Penang Hill and managing director of Pacific Tiger Group, on the line with me. Before the break, we talked about how the Habitat came to be, as well as Penang's environment, how it lends itself well to ecotourism, and also a little bit about the Habitat Foundation. We also got started a little bit on the effect of the pandemic, which, of course, as you mentioned before the break, is the elephant in the room. So tell me a little bit more about what happened when the pandemic began, I suppose.
It was hard. I can't sugarcoat this. We tried our absolute best to put on a brave face and keep the park going as long as we could until the hard lockdowns started to come into effect. We tried our best to keep the team intact, right? Because our businesses are only as good as the people that operate them. But we had a sizable team. It's a big park to maintain. It's a big park to operate. So we had over 80 staff that we tried our best to keep in place. But ultimately, after almost 1 year of zero business, we had to start making some hard decisions about the future of the park. And I have to admit, at some points, it was hard. We were looking at some more serious issues at play, right? That we didn't think that we would be able to survive these stringent lockdowns.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's the light of the tunnel started to show. And as Penang did a great job with their COVID response, vaccination, starting to open up to local tourism, and then ultimately recently now with domestic tourism coming back, the park is reopened. Mm-hmm. And we are now catering to local tourists again, which is a great thing. But I think where we can't forget is the reliance that we had, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of tourism in Malaysia, the reliance that we have on foreign tourists. And that's something that we still don't have any clarity on as to when that's going to come back. Even when programs are lifted by government, which I think there's already been some rumors about and some movement on, when those foreign tourists actually come back to Malaysia, it's still hard to say, right? There are other big tourism draws in the world, in the region, Phuket, Bali, places like that, that I'm sure would be filled first. But, you know, we're trying our best to liaise with international agencies, with our own sort of online marketing and things like that, to bring those tourists back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you mentioned, right, the tourism industry took such a massive hit because of the pandemic. And now slowly, as you said, as interstate travel is allowed again, hopefully people will start to look out for, you know, more of these sorts of experiences. And you were actually saying before the break that you seem to see this growing trend, right, in people seeking out being closer to nature right now. So do you think that's going to help with the, I suppose, the resuscitation of business at the habitat?
Certainly, I think it will. I think all over the world, you know, the wellness industry has done very well, right, as people try to get healthier. And tried to be more connected. Here in Hong Kong, you could see the use of our hiking trails was, you know, went through the roof. Everybody was outside. Everybody was taking advantage of the clearer air because of the lack of pollution. The closure of gyms just forced people out onto hiking trails. But I think that, and I think that that trend is global, right? It's not just in Hong Kong. It's not just in Malaysia. And I think it's here to stay. People have an innate desire to be healthier and to be more reconnected. And something I should probably also mention as well, I mean, while COVID was hard for the habitat as a park, it actually opened up lots of opportunities for the foundation. We continued with our conservation work. We considered funding our NGO partners. We continued to fund research grants to universities or individual researchers. But one thing that we were able to pivot into is online education. And we found a lot of Malaysians very receptive to this, right? So we started by doing a lot of online virtual tours of the habitat park. Our naturalists would go around during the day or even at night with specialized torches to try and identify flora and fauna and teach it to people online. And the response was great. You know, we would have, for every online tour, we'd have hundreds of participants tuning in, and particularly kids asking questions about, you know, what the spider eats or how the colugo hunts and all this kind of stuff. And that was, and I think that was really great. And that's what's forced us to really rethink how we really spread that education message about biodiversity in Malaysia. So we're now starting, we started what we call the Habitat Academy, which we provide a lot of online resources, both on a professional side for researchers, tools for them to use in the work that they do, but also just general education pieces for school kids and people at home, so that they can follow along with the research that our partners are doing and the successes that they have and really sort of understand the breadth of work that is being done in Malaysia and can be done, right, as more and more organizations like us participate.
Absolutely. What is your approach to operating the habitat moving forward? You know, are you implementing new procedures in place to align with the sort of post-pandemic normal, I guess, that we're now in?
Absolutely. So already as it is, we've put in place very stringent SOPs on hygiene, on social distancing, and things like that. But I think going forward, we're going to try and pivot the park a little bit so that we bring in smaller groups at a time with a much more one-on-one interactive experience. When we first started the park, when we were still building our followers, we had that model, right, where we had our naturalists taking people around and really in small groups doing a lot of one-on-one face-to-face education. And we actually found that that was probably the most success that we had in telling that biodiversity conservation story and that habitat preservation story. So I think we're going to take advantage of the need to slow things down a little bit and pace things out a little bit and go back to that more guided, personalized experience, both for the impact that it has on the listener and on the visitor, as well as then complying, of course, with the new norms when it comes to health and safety standards.
Right. I mean, if you can have a walking tour of any city in the world, you can definitely have a walking tour of a forest, I suppose.
100%. Absolutely. Right.
So tell me a little bit, what are the goals for the future of the Habitat and the Habitat Foundation?
Well, maybe if I could just take a step back from that first, right, and kind of explain a little bit the goals that we now have as a parent organization at the Pacific Tiger Group, and even from my family itself. So the experience, as I alluded to at the beginning of this conversation, the experience that we've had in building the habitat, running the habitat, evolving the habitat, and founding the foundation, and continue to pivot in how we can be better stewards of the natural environment in Malaysia, has really forced us to rethink our entire business, right? We are now, as I said, a purpose-led business, right? We're a purpose business. Our goal and our mission is to ensure that there is that we are impact-aligned, right, in terms of our environmental impact, our social impact, and the governance that we apply to it. As a food business, we've become clean label, or we're on the mission to become clean label. We are palm oil free throughout our supply chain. We think about things like transparency of our supply chain, traceability of our supply chain. We take these things very seriously because we do see ourselves as stewards of a multi-generational business, right? And really as the experience that we had as stewards of the habitat, that's really sort of incubated this ethos that we now have for our wider business. For the habitat specifically, we want to continue to grow it. As soon as our interstate borders opened up last month, the team has been quite busy going around Malaysia trying to identify other at-risk environments, particularly in Peninsular Malaysia, where a similar model of a revenue-generating entity that then provides conservation and research attention would apply, right? So we've been looking, and now we're not isolating ourselves to rainforests, although we are looking at more rainforests. We're starting to look at opportunities in marine systems, right? Turtle conservation efforts, coral regrafting, and things like that. Food being our main source of business globally, looking at food education in Malaysia and what good farming and fishing practices should mean, sustainable fishing practices and farming practices we should be using, right? And educating the public about those things. So the work continues. The team is very engaged and everyone's very energized to see what we can do in the new year. Yeah, and we're excited for all the things to come.
Well, I'm excited to see all things to come as well. Thank you so much, Reza, for speaking to me all about the Habitat Penang Hill today.
Thank you for having me, Christine.
You've been listening to Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong. I've been speaking to Reza Cockrell, founder of the Habitat Penang Hill and managing director of Pacific Tiger Group, all about the habitat and the appeal of ecotourism. Now, if you've missed any of today's show, you can go ahead and download our app that's available on the Apple App Store and Google Play, or head to bfm.my to download and listen to our podcasts. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.